Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as you've been hearing, WNYC reporter Janet Babin and photographer Amy Pearl are making their way up the coast from Cape May to Montauk to assess the situation 3 months after Sandy hit. You can follow them on their road trip and give them tips using the hashtag CoastCheck. Janet, where are you now?
Hey, Brian. So I am on Locust Street in the Highlands. Yesterday, one of your callers suggested we come here. And in front of me is the Paradise Trailer Park, and this is adjacent to the Sandy Hook Bay Marina, so we're on the bayside. The trailer park is strewn with debris. It looks like very little cleanup has happened here. And at the marina, there was a work crew still clearing debris. This is still a disaster area here. It's weird because even though it's called the Highlands here on Locust Street, you look to the left and you see these, it's like a cliff. But you're really at a low level. Like, this street is very much the same level as the bay. And most of these homes are modest little bungalows. And I was speaking to a contractor, Chris Curtis. His dad lives on this street, and he's doing some work here this morning. And he says all these little bungalows, you know, they're going to have to be raised up according to the new flood standards. But his dad's on Social Security and a fixed income. He just has no idea how people here are going to pay to raise up their homes high enough to meet the new standards. And now the whole town is even talking about possibly lifting up the entire town.
What does that mean?
Well, the Army Corps of Engineers has this plan to raise the whole town, to kind of backfill the whole town. It's just an idea because this town, the Highlands, flood during every nor'easter, during just about every storm we've had here. So people are just looking for answers. I was speaking to some of the residents here, and they're like, it sounds like a crazy idea. They're not in favor of it, but they're also not in favor of paying $10,000 a month with flood insurance, for flood insurance, nor do they want to spend, you know, $30,000-$40,000 to lift up their homes. So they just don't know what they're going to do right now. They're looking for all kinds of solutions that might not exist.
So you've only been on the road for 2 days, and it sounds like you've already seen some of the range and some of the randomness of Sandy's destruction. When we talked to you yesterday, you were in Cape May, which did not sustain a lot of damage. But after we talked to you, you made your way up Long Beach Island, which was badly hit. You went to North Beach and Surf City, and now you're describing what you've seen in Highlands. What's your impression so far, just of the range of what you're seeing?
Well, it really is a range. It really depends on where you were. Perhaps it depends on beach management systems, but it also depends on the wrath of the storm. What's interesting, though, Brian, is that we're looking to get a sentiment index from people. And we spoke to some people yesterday who were hit extremely hard. One guy at Bain's Hardware Store in Seabright lost $500,000 in inventory, had no flood insurance, had to start over. But he said he was really optimistic about the future, and he just would never want to move his store away from the ocean. And then another guy in kind of a similar situation in Surf City said, you know, he's really pessimistic. He doesn't know what he's going to do. He's really concerned about the future. So it almost seems like it depends on the person. People who were hit hard can sometimes be optimistic about the future, whereas others who sustained little damage can be very fearful and insecure about what comes next.
And I know that guy you were referring to is Joe Wright, the owner of Scojo's, the popular diner that a lot of people around there know that had to be gutted and closed for 2 months. And I guess he said if he has to raise that building due to the new flood maps, that he in particular will have to close. You also went to Seabright. They have a sea wall. Did that town fare any better?
Well, the sea wall is controversial because according to some of the researchers I spoke with, there is evidence that sea walls do save property. And in Seabright, there was destruction despite the sea wall, but people say that the sea wall did work. The problem, though, is that the sea wall actually ends up eroding the beach. So you have to spend a lot of money replenishing the sand in front of that sea wall because the sea wall gets rid of the sand. It sort of makes it erode faster. And when we were at Seabright yesterday, we did see a lot of activity on the beach. Like, they were already starting to rebuild some of the beach clubs, and you could see that they were pumping sand on the beach already.
Where are you going next?
Well, coming up next, we wanted to go to Broad Channel. That was another suggestion from listeners. And, of course, Staten Island's on our list. We're going to head out to Long Beach and eventually, as you said, making our way out to Montauk.
All right, and we will keep checking in with you. WNYC reporter Janet Bammon, along with WNYC photographer Amy Pearl, on the road this week from Cape May to Montauk. And again, listeners, you can follow their road trip and give them tips on Twitter using the hashtag CoastCheck. Thanks a lot, Janet. Good luck.
Thank you, Brian.
By the way, listeners, based on what you've seen, heard, and experienced, how optimistic are you about the post-Sandy recovery process? Let us know at WNYC.org. You can put yourself on a spectrum. We have what we call a sentiment map from very optimistic to very pessimistic. We'll track how people are feeling by where you live, and we'll show that on a map in the coming days. Go to WNYC.org and register your level of optimism or pessimism about Sandy recovery at WNYC.org. And now we turn to WNYC's Robert Lewis. He's been reporting on what he's calling Disaster Inc., the post-Sandy boom for some businesses and workers. Hi, Robert.
Good morning.
So one person's disaster is another person's opportunity. Who's getting work out of this disaster?
A ton of people and a ton of companies, and really across different sectors. The biggest one is obviously construction companies. The trades are doing really well. A lot of guys who've probably been out of work for a while or been struggling to find jobs are working again, and obviously they're working for companies. There's companies throughout the region and across the country. One of the things I found was that there's actually a lot of out-of-state companies that have sort of flocked to the area to really I hate to use the term take advantage because it sounds loaded, but to take advantage of the opportunity.
Are we talking about cleanup work, construction, electricians, plumbers, things like that, or stuff in addition to that?
Both. A lot of it is the cleanup. The out-of-state companies that really flocked here right after the storm were these large cleanup companies, which is a very specialized business. These are a lot of companies sort of out of the South, out of Florida, out of Texas, areas that are used to having hurricanes. They filed paperwork in November to sort of do work here in New York legally. And I talked to some of them. And then on top of that, there's the construction companies, there's consultants. And I think we're going to continue to see an influx of contractors as obviously this spending continues to go forward.
And listeners, anyone out there waiting for work to be done on your home or business, 212-433-WNYC. Anyone who's gotten work for some kind of Sandy-related recovery effort, want to call up and tell us what kind of job it is and who's hiring, 212-433-9692 for our investigative reporter, Robert Lewis. And Robert, you tell the story that contractors from Atlanta were literally waiting in the wings for the storm to pass and then swooped in. You did a Freedom of Information request of corporate filings to find out some of this. So where else are these companies coming from? And do you see anything dirty or sleazy about this, or is this just business?
Well, the companies are coming from a lot of the southern states that have experience with hurricanes. But elsewhere, I found a company in Indiana, a company in Minnesota, a company in Michigan. So they are sort of spread throughout the country. And to your question about it, is there anything dirty about this? Not necessarily. I mean, I think a lot of it depends on a case-by-case basis who's behind these companies. And it's definitely something I looked at. I looked for lawsuits. I looked for clips of problems with these companies. And in a lot of cases, people spoke pretty positively about them.
Are they hiring people from New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, or are they bringing people from out of state to do all this work?
It's a great question, and there's actually an economic term for what you just said, and it's called leakage, and it's when capital and money flows out of a market, out of an economy. And so that is something economists worry about or look at. Are these people hiring locally? Are they spending locally? The gentleman I talked to from the Atlanta company, he brought about 10 guys with him, and he hired, at least according to him, he hired 90 workers locally. And so he really did seem to be benefiting the local economy. He did say, however, he is aware of other companies coming from out of state that really try to bring their own crews with them.
And for those who can get these jobs, are these good paying jobs?
Some of them are. I mean, again, it's a case-by-case basis. I think you probably have your companies that are paying very, very low wages for people desperate to work. You have some companies that are paying quite well. Again, he claims that he was paying, I think it was $20 an hour for some pretty grunt storm-related work. And that's not bad work for or not bad pay necessarily for people that haven't been working.
If there are all these out-of-state companies coming to do this work, does that mean there are no qualified companies here in New York, in New Jersey, in Connecticut?
Well, I'm sure there are people in the trades.
Or not enough?
I'm sure there are people in the trades that might be a little bit upset to hear about out-of-state companies. That being said, you know, the folks I talked to said anytime you have a storm of this magnitude, there is trouble finding people who can mobilize quickly and do the job that needs to be done. And so the guy I talked to in Atlanta again, it's a specialized industry. He's got $1 million worth of equipment, very specialized equipment, tanker trucks that pump 4,000 gallons a minute. That is not necessarily something your average construction company has on hand. So he was hired by a commercial building owner to come in, and he was able to do work very quickly that, at least in his opinion, a lot of New York contractors might not be able to do.
Aaron at the Brook. Oh, is Aaron ready to go? Maybe not. Let's. Now he is. Aaron at the Brooklyn Navy Yard. You're on the air. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. I'm a small business in the Brooklyn Navy Yard home improvement contractor, licensed and therefore insured with workers' compensation, which cost me 20% by payroll at this time. And it's a lot of money, but I see a lot of workers in a lot of home improvement companies are not licensed and are not insured, and therefore they're not paying insurance or taxes. It's about 40% combined, lower labor rates. Are the homes and residences that are damaged by Sandy being restored by licensed home improvement contractors who pay workers' compensation insurance if in New York City, and if in the state, perhaps there are different licensing regulations, but
yeah,
as far as the compensation insurance, that's where the money is. Are they covered?
It's a great question.
You know, I think that's something we're going to be finding out going forward. I think as we see problems crop up, as we start seeing lawsuits, I do think we're gonna start seeing that a bit. Obviously, given the scope of Sandy and given the amount of work out there, you know, everyone I talked to said it. Of course, you're going to find people that are working without the proper licenses. It's sort of a question: how do you catch them?
And a lot of this work is coming from government programs like Rapid Repairs. The state of New York has doled out $267 million, is the number I read, in what were essentially no-bid contracts. And they were clearly prioritizing speed, which after Sandy makes some sense. But at some point, are they going to prioritize giving contracts to local companies, union workers, companies like Aaron says are paying workman's comp and paying other taxes?
Conceivably, that is what will happen going forward. As you said, the figure that came out of the state comptroller's office, that was under special emergency provisions that allow them to bypass the normal bidding requirements. Same thing happened in the city. Close to a billion is the latest figure. I think it was $927 million coming out of the state comptroller's office. And again, some of those are no-bid contracts given to people they already know. Some of them are limited bid, where they'll sort of reach out to a handful of people they know and then select a bid or a winner based on the qualifications.
Marie in Nassau County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Marie.
Hi. How are you?
Okay.
Somebody did some work for me at my house, and I need to find out if I have been overcharged, and I feel that I've been overcharged on the job.
How would somebody go about, if you know, Robert, registering that complaint? Or are there any guidelines? Or is the charge just what the market will bear? What I do know is that Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, the New York State Attorney General's office, has been taking price gouging complaints since shortly after the storm. I don't know exactly what his standard is for contractors, how they determine expensive from price gouging. But Marie, that's one thing you can do is contact the New York State Attorney General's office. Is there anything else?
That's exactly what I was going to recommend, Brian. I know the AG's office has been putting out a lot of information telling people to be on the lookout and sort of availing their services as a watchdog. So I would recommend reaching out to them. And if they are unable to take the complaint, potentially they can refer you to one of the consumer sort of watchdog agencies.
And by the way, this harkens back for me to the immigration conversation we were having in our previous segment, and that is just to remind everybody that there are scammers out there. There are scammers out there. If you've been victimized by Sandy, you have to be careful. There are scammers out there waiting in the wings to take advantage of you if you're an undocumented immigrant and promise things that the government isn't even putting down on paper yet. So be careful, be careful, be careful. So Robert Lewis, are you done with this story, or are there questions you're still trying to ask?
Oh, many, many questions. This is going to go on for quite a while. I think we are really just beginning to get a sense of who is sort of making the money off the storm. And obviously the billions were just approved, and billions are going to be flowing to the region. And I think as that comes in, I know we will, and I would be willing to bet just about every media outlet is going to be paying attention to where that goes.
WNYC investigative reporter Robert Lewis. Robert, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Coming up next, Jad and Sean from Radiolab expose the difference between medicine as practiced in real life and medicine as shown on TV. Stay with us.